everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Straight Up, the pop culture podcast hosted by journalist Kathleen and Ellie. That's us.
Hello.
Have missed you all so much after our week away. We were both in Greece, weirdly, at the same time.
I know.
We did not plan that, but...
Everyone is on a Greek island this summer, it feels, from a certain circle.
A certain demographic.
Well,
perhaps in our classic shared luck style, we both chose the one week of the summer where Greece has been a washout. I mean, not to say that I would have wanted to be in forest fires, but we have both seemed to have chosen the week of the year where it rained and stormed for the vast majority of the holiday.
Genuinely, everywhere I went, the waiters were like, we've never seen waves like these. We've never seen weather like this. We had to seek refuge in an indoor spa. I went in a sauna and steam room,
the
indoor
indignity.
Pool. I mean, how could I cope, Cathers? But yes, it was raining a lot, and thunder and lightning and winds so strong that you had to hold on to your drinks outside. We were at a beach club and I couldn't even open my book because the pages would like go mental.
Well, I respect the commitment to trying yeah. to be on the beach all the same. So for listeners that might not have tuned in last time, you were doing a feature. You were there on holidaying, but also journalistic duties.
Yes. So I did mention it at the end of last episode. I essentially sold my soul to get a travel freebie, which meant that I had to write all about mine and Issa's embarrassing attempts to be super romantic, because neither of us really like do the whole like textbook romance thing.
What was the most romantic thing you did?
Well, this is the problem, is that the weather meant that the romantic things we tried to do turned into farce. Like, we booked this this 9-hour yacht trip around Paros and Antiparos. It was amazing, obviously, to be able to do that. But the water was so choppy and the skies were like so thunderous that eventually it was almost like a scene from Triangle of Sadness, where I was like, oh my God, are we all going to be sick at the same time when this like stew that one of the staff had been preparing for us for over like 6 hours, she started cooking at 9 a.m. and she was going to serve it at 4, and it was like this very like fragrant prawn stew.
That's your nightmare as well, because you hate prawns.
Yes. And so I was like feeling seasick. Everyone was drinking loads of free wine. I was actually unable to. And we weren't even able to sit on the deck because people were getting like knocked out by the sail and stuff.
Also, even like everyone, like, is it that romantic when there's 10 other people on said boat trip?
We didn't realise that there would be so many people, and there were these two Australian girls. One girl was this nurse who hadn't had a holiday in 4 years, and she was twerking on the deck of the boat and her friend, and they were clearly having beef as well. So it was like loads of drama going on there.
This is all really not sounding romantic.
No, and then the fashion designer, at one point when we were all ushered inside to like be protected from the waves that were genuinely like splashing all the way across the deck, he goes, I'm not going to do the accent, but he was like, let's play White Lotus. Let's go round in our couples and we all have to nominate which couple's going to die, how they're going to die.
Oh God, and who that kills sounds a bit them. Too meta, because it actually sounds yeah. quite White Lotus.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, this is so awkward because we could all be in the White Lotus. What if one of us is actually going to die? And everyone looked terrified and no one played the game. So yeah, most romantic moment. To be honest, it was actually probably meeting this really cute grandmother up in a village who like let us into her house to watch her, so we could watch her thread on her grandmother's loom and buy one of her cushions. And she told us all about her like romantic stories and how she's...
Oh my God, babe, this actually sounds quite horrific. I mean, no offense, I love you, I love this, but how is meeting an old grandma and hearing her old sewing stories like, the height of romance?
I was like, why aren't you reacting in a positive way?
Well, I was expecting starlit dinners for two. I was imagining, you know, nude swims in waterfalls. I don't know,
none of that.
Grandmother's tales.
Well, she had to marry a man at 17 because her dad caught her kissing him next door.
Highly romantic.
They married at 60, and then she was pregnant by 17, a widow by 40. But the romantic bit of the story was that she'd just got a new boyfriend and she was over the moon.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Yes. Have a bit of later life romance.
And we've got her cushion. No, that's the cushion I showed you.
Oh, the one you said off air was actually hideous.
It is hideous. My dad said it was hideous and we shouldn't keep it in the sitting room, but...
There it is.
Cost 40 euros. So I'm bloody well keeping it in the sitting room. Anyway, onwards. Tell me about your much more romantic trip.
Well, it was by virtue of being a wedding planning trip, much more romantic by the sounds of things. And it was great.
Where
we were in
Lefkada,
so that's where we're getting married next year. It's this really, really cute Greek island that we'd been to before that is really handy because it's like 20 minutes from the airport and you just go over a bridge. You don't have to get on any boats or anything. So you can literally fly directly there. It's just, it's like the antithesis of like a Mykonos Santorini vibe. Like it's very Greek. It's like tavernas. It's just quite like rustic still. And it's really cheap, which is very big plus. And it was just amazing. We were like so, so happy to be there. Obviously, the weather made it a little bit rubbish, but we had so much to do, like quite a lot of driving around. We were checking out like the venues and stuff like that. So
is it fun like doing the wine tasting and stuff? Or does it feel like a chore?
Do you know what? One of my friends was saying this before. She was like, oh, it's meant to be like one of the funnest parts of wedding planning. Not going to lie. Again, we've chosen this like quite simple place to get married and just to like to give you perspective. So we have a wedding planner. I'm using the word wedding planner with like air quotes because she's the wedding planner, but she's also the photographer and the owner of the venue. So
multi-hyphenate.
Yes, it's very much not a wedding planner in like the bougie sense that you kind of picture. She's just kind of an all-rounder. She basically does everything. Esther, she is actually amazing. I met her for the first time when I was there. So that was great because I was like, she's really lovely. And yeah, the place that we're getting married is like, it's kind of like an olive grove. It's kind of like an empty field. So, you know, you have to use your imagination when you're looking at it. But
are there donkeys?
No. Why would there be donkeys?
I don't know. I have a certain vision of like some Greek islands with little donkeys on them.
No, there wasn't any donkeys. But the wine tastings, yes. There's only like one type of wine. Like they were already said to me, like, this is the wine we're serving. Like, this is the white. This is the red. It's just like a local Lefkada wine.
So you're tasting one wine.
Yeah. So I was like, well, what if we don't like it? And she's like, well, you can go to the vineyard and try it if you want. Because I was like, I feel a bit weird to like serve 100 people wine that we've literally never tried. So we went to the vineyard to try it anyway. But yes, it was a pretty short wine tasting because it was trying. They did in fact have two whites, but then it was one red and one rosé. So it was literally just trying like a sip of each of the wines.
And what? And were they good?
And yeah, they were drinkable, which I was pleased about. I mean, I'm not going to lie, they're probably not like the most delicious wines in the world, but they're definitely drinkable. People will enjoy them. They'll 100% do the job. The rosé I was pleasantly surprised by because the pictures I'd seen of it was like a deep, like purple almost.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Like how the darker the rosé, you kind of have bad feelings about it.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was tasty. And I think with a lot of ice in there, it'll go down very well. So that was a relief. And
I actually read from a chef the other day that people need to stop being so snooty about putting ice in their drinks and you should put ice in your beer and everything.
Oh, okay. So. I mean, I love a bit of ice in my wine. So that was really fun. It was also amazing going to check out like the place where we're going to do the drinks, like a drinks on the Friday night. Because obviously with it being a broad wedding, I don't want to be like one of those people that's got like a week long wedding, but equally you can't really ask people to come to Greece for like one day of celebrations. So we're organizing things on each side. So we like went and checked out like a little beach bar for the day after, for the Sunday.
Oh my God.
And
I am so excited.
I'm so excited.
And it's after Glastonbury.
It's right after Glastonbury. So I was thinking, because I wanted to go to Glastonbury, but I was determined, in fact, to go next year. But it's like literally like 3 days before I'd be going out for Greece. And I even want to go out to Greece like that weekend. So I'm like, maybe it's just too much. Maybe next year I have to accept. And it's also in between like the official wedding, which is what we have to do in London because the Greek thing is like ceremonial.
Do you know what we could do together? Although you have already been, but I'd quite like to go to Love International.
I would love to go to Love International again. And I also, you've been to Tisno, so it's kind of the same experience. I would also really like to go to Lost Village again, which obviously you went to last year.
We could do both, babes, because Lost Village is at the end of August. So different months.
Very good point.
Yeah.
So yes, all in all, highly, highly, highly recommend a holiday to Lefkada. I don't really know how you pronounce it, but
Lefkada.
Honestly, guys, if you're into a Greek island and you don't want the Instagram bougie bitch life, then Lefkada is the place for you. It was so nice. Like you go out for a meal and it's like 40 euros for dinner for two.
Oh my God. Paros was so expensive.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was still like under the radar.
Yeah, it's really expensive. I think it's because finally it is becoming an influencer destination. Annoyingly, they're coming over from Santorini and Mykonos.
Oh.
And it is becoming a bit of a party island.
You hated Mykonos, didn't you? I'm now not going to bother to go there after your
do not go,
dim
babe.
Reviews. Dim? Is that
dim.
The word? Dire?
Dire.
They not that you're dim.
Yeah, they won't dim. Thank you very
you
much.
You were like, I hated it and it was really windy.
Well, Paros was even
extremely windy.
Was even windier.
Lefkada is also very windy. People literally go there to do like sailing and stuff.
Was it like to the point where you couldn't really be outside?
I mean, you could be outside, but it was like
unpleasant.
Yeah. So that was our holidays. Not to sound like ungrateful little bitches, but you know, could have been better than having 2 days of sun.
Yeah,
still
come on.
Really enjoyed it.
Zeus could have been a bit kinder to us. On a more positive note, I went to quite literally my favourite hotel in the world, in Athens. It was called Mona Athens, and it was like a boutique hotel that just hasn't even had that much coverage.
It's how
like,
did you hear about it?
Issa found it because we just needed somewhere to stay in Athens for 2 nights.
Because that was your stopover.
It was our stopover. He found it. When we got there, the room itself is something out of like, it looks like a Parisian film, like what you'd imagine like the sexiest girl ever in Paris to be living in on her own in a studio. It was like a massive bath, one of those really low beds, like beautiful copper furnishings.
Is it affordable?
So there are rooms from like 158
okay.
up to more expensive ones. But yeah, between 158 to like 400.
I mean, I would always book the smallest room, obviously.
But the smallest rooms are so nice. Yeah. And some of the smallest rooms actually come with balconies.
Cute.
And the best thing of all is the rooftop, which has views onto the Acropolis, where I spent all my time reading. Huge rooftop with an honesty bar. So you could just go and like get a bottle of wine. We met people. We shared this couple that we met there. We're just having a bottle of wine and then they had too much. So they gave us a glass. And
kind.
The Acropolis is all lit up. You can have breakfast there.
I've never been to Athens, but you I will must add that go. To my list. Right.
Yes, let's move on.
Let's move on to today's proceedings. We need to get stuck into the Sophie Turner, Joe Jonas divorce.
Oh my gosh.
I have thoughts. Do you have thoughts?
Yes. So the rundown, guys, is that Sophie Turner and Joe Jonas got married in 2019 after having started dating in 2017. They had mutual friends. Oh, they had mutual friends. And then he slid into her DMs. And fun fact, she was so worried that he was a catfish that she brought all of her rugby guy friends, those are her words, to come to the date. Yeah.
Yeah. He was touring in London at the time.
So they got married. First, they had a Vegas wedding with an Elvis impersonator after the Billboard Music Awards, which I find very odd. Why did they suddenly just decide to get married?
Because the prenup had all been sorted like a few days before. So in the legal filings, you can see that happened prior. So they knew they'd also been engaged. They got engaged after only a year of getting together. Then they got married a year after that. So she was only 23. Their age now, she's 27, he's 34. It all moved very quickly, yes. Their relationship. And I think for a long time, people were like, oh my God, gold. I thought they were really cute. Even when they first broke up, I was like, oh my God, sad.
Same.
And actually, what's actually gone down since the divorce has been announced has made me look at Joe Jonas in particular in a whole new light.
Definitely.
Never a huge Jonas Brothers fan anyway, but I was sort of indifferent to him. And actually, I think it's pretty obvious what's going down here is a slight, well, like a PR campaign from his camp that's trying to smear her, basically make her sound like a bad mother, make her sound like she's crazy because she wants to have a bit of freedom, have fun with her friends. It's all being twisted in quite a weird way. I don't really know where we should even begin with it.
So I think we'll have to run through the facts. So it all started, right, when there was a picture of him without his wedding ring, which prompted speculation that there was issues. Then it was announced by TMZ, who he clearly is in his pocket.
Yeah, the source at TMZ is like very pro Joe Jonas.
Definitely. So TMZ announced that Joe Jonas had filed for divorce in September, citing irreconcilable breakdowns
of the marriage. Yeah, so I think even that was a tactical decision. So he filed for divorce in Miami. What's weird is it was 3 weeks after she'd posted like a lovey picture with them.
I saw that on like August the 14th.
Yeah, so and however, reports are saying that actually the relationship has like broken down like over the last 6 months. They've been separated since 6 months ago. This is kind of like not a new thing. And people think that actually he chose quite a tactical way to go about it. So he purposefully filed for divorce in Miami, where the family have always lived, while Sophie is away in the UK working. So she has been in Birmingham working on a new ITV series called Joan. Mm. He has been doing, I guess, a lot of the childcare since then. And even that, we'll get into it in a second, but it's quite problematic the way the TMZ sources in particular and the tabloids have spun this. Like, Joe is looking after the children practically all the time, even while he's on tour. Well, yeah, that's like a co-parenting decision. Like, she's working in England, so...
They both have careers where they need to be away at different points.
Yeah, and actually, for a man to be looking after his children, surely, like, is that that deep? Like, does he deserve a gold medal? Like, no.
She probably spent 9 months giving birth to both of them.
And she's done loads of childcare. Like, in the past, she's been quoted talking about how Joe's, like, bouncing around different cities every night. And so, like, when she was filming for something in another part of America, she relocated the family for 9 months because she was like, well, I have to come home to my daughter. Like, it's pretty obvious that the childcare split has been, you know, fair, if not just decided tactfully based on their jobs. And now it's being spun into this idea that, like, he's the good father, she's the party mom.
Did you notice as well that the TMZ posted pictures of Joe Jonas with the kids and the nanny at a brunch? And what was
so obviously staged. A PR. Yeah.
And someone said that it's really odd because they've both in the past been really, really private, never having their kids photographed. So it's really odd that they would suddenly be photographed. And then I went deep in a Reddit thread and someone on Reddit was like, my sister worked at a restaurant that Joe Jonas always used to go to. And apparently he would always call the paps on himself.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Which is quite tragic in its own way, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, there's this narrative that he's been caring for the kids, as we say, pretty much all the time. And by the tabloid, she's basically been painted as a bad mother. And they're saying that she, in like quotes, this again, unnamed source for TMZ, who's kind of given the bulk of information that everyone's then been running with, that she likes to party. What's weird about that is in the past, they've both specifically said in interviews that she's more of the homebody and that she's the introvert and that it's he that's the social butterfly. Yeah. So it all seems very convenient that suddenly she's a wild one.
So without, like, psychoanalyzing their relationship too much,
it feels... Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. And they were always very private.
Yeah, it does feel to me that they basically got married just before COVID, and therefore they had 2 years where they were both stuck at home together. And she actually said in a quote that, like, she was really happy with COVID because it meant that Joe...
Yeah, she literally, like, locked him down. And he's like, he would text her from the kitchen. He was doing these live stream DJ performances. And he'd be like, what time is it? And she was literally, like, 6 months pregnant at the time, like, secretly. But, and she'd have to be like, it's shots time, and, like, pour him shots and stuff. Like, he is clearly the party animal in that relationship. But even if she is having a good time, well, good for her. She's 27. She got married at sodding 23, or she met him at 23, got married at 24. Like, she had 2 children under the age of 27. She went straight from Game of Thrones to her relationship with Joe. Like, they obviously would have bonded because they're both kind of teen stars, I guess, anyway. So for reference, she was 15 when she got the role of Sansa Stark. But I just think, so what if she wants to have a good time? Like, literally, so what? This painting as if you can't be a mum and also, like, go out with your friends occasionally is absolute madness.
So weird. And also the way the Daily Mail tried to portray her, like, all partying in Birmingham. It's like, oh no, it's just called hanging out with your, like, fellow actors.
And it was like the rap party or something. And they're literally having a couple of drinks. I think it's really interesting as well. Like, in March 2019, Sophie told Glamour that she basically spoke about finding happiness following, like, an identity crisis as a teenager. And she said that after, like, growing up faster than she probably should have, like, Joe Jonas, like, helped her find herself again. She was quite a vulnerable person. Again, in her Elle 2022 cover story, she said, I'm quite glad that I had the next thing to move on to. If I hadn't found Joe, I think I would have felt quite lost after Game of Thrones. And I did feel quite lost after it finished. But it forced me into this new chapter, which was really exciting and something for me to focus on. It was the perfect thing to move on to. Which just sounds like she's had, like, a crazy life. She's gone from, like, mad fame and, like, all of the attention that came with Game of Thrones into this, like, celeb couple relationship where there's a lot of eyes on them. I know they've been as private as possible about it, but I think she's someone that's had a really, really hard time. She's also spoken about the fact that she had, like, a very severe eating disorder. Yeah. She even had, like, a live-in therapist at one time. You know, she was a vulnerable person.
Yeah, and I feel kind of conflicted saying this, but when I was reading those quotes and she was like, you know, I kind of owe Joe my happiness and he made me love me for me. And he said to me that I can't love you until you love yourself.
Yeah.
And it all just felt a bit like, oh, I don't know.
It reeks slightly of coercive control.
Yeah, it just felt like she heroized him so much. And
no wonder you're going to come out the other side of that at 27 maybe in a better place, having had 2 children, and be like, actually, I want to have some life for me.
And again, I'm not this is not conjecturing that this is what he was like, but there are lots of tales of men who kind of gravitate towards emotionally and mentally very vulnerable women, become their kind of protector and like very much lead them towards safety and yeah, a new kind of happiness. But then the people that the vulnerable people owe them so much, and there's such a power imbalance just with that. In fact, there's one person, one of my friends, who had a severe mental breakdown and had a boyfriend throughout that, and then as soon as she recovered, she like dumped him straight away because she was suddenly like, what am I doing?
Don't need this.
Like, this is like such a weirdly imbalanced relationship where you're like, feel like you're protecting me and like my savior, and I don't need that anymore.
Interesting.
So I think that must, I mean, I just don't, obviously I have no idea whether what's going on in their romantic lives. I do find it interesting that they got together, basically had the first few years of their marriage during COVID, and lo and behold, hasn't worked out, because you can't act that, having a relationship during COVID is not an accurate experience of a relationship. Like, that will be a completely different marriage to post-COVID.
I feel like, I don't even know, like, I totally hear what you're saying, but to me, it's not even really about the COVID thing, in the sense that like they started dating in 2016. Like, they had like 5 years of a relationship before COVID. I feel That's like true. It's more about her age. Like, we all change. And at the end of the day, you know, there's what, a 7 year age gap between them. Like, people change, they grow up. Like, I was really, really, really surprised when they got together, because I thought that she was very young to be getting married. Again, like, each their own, but I personally, no diss to anyone else, I'm not a huge fan of getting married in your 20s. I think it's like quite a risky decision to make. I just think I was surprised in Sophie Turner for kind of settling down so quickly, but it's similar with like Kylie Jenner. When you feel like a full-on straight like adult at 16, then I guess you do then like lean into these very adult lifestyle choices when you're older, but then perhaps again have this, like we say, this kind of like kickback when you're like, actually no, like she was quoted in an interview being like, I when I'm around my like London friends, my home friends, I realize how young we are, like we're just 25 26, like I'm a child. And she was saying that with a child, pregnant with her second.
Yes. And also, I can imagine if you're really emotionally vulnerable, then the idea of being married to someone you love is incredibly engaging.
One of our listeners, when I posted about it on our Instagram, had a very interesting response, which I think sums it up perfectly, which is just basically that the way his team is talking shit about her to the press so loudly is so embarrassing for him. Also, when they met, she was a baby and had severe mental health problems. And in so many interviews, she says, he saved me and taught me that I was lovable. Sounds like an unhealthy foundation from the start. But the most gross thing is that his source is basically saying that she's a bad mother. I spy a nasty custody battle coming while she tries to take the kids back to the UK.
Very
which I think
much
is
so
true. And I think he's trying to plant those seeds now.
Definitely. So one of the weirdest things to come out of this is sources, again, speaking to TMZ, saying that Joe found something peculiar on their Ring camera.
Yes.
I.e. suggesting that Sophie had come
said
home,
or did something compromising.
Yeah. And with another person, and that apparently she'd slept around. That was a suggestion.
Do you think? I didn't get that from that. I felt like it was, again, another like clutching at straws when they're like, she did or said something compromising. Like, she could have made a comment to a friend. And I do think it's interesting the way it's been pulled up. I don't know if you saw this, but people are now referencing a quote that Gigi Hadid had given in an interview ages ago. So they dated briefly in like 2008, something like that. She has mentioned that he first asked her out when she was 13 years old. He was 19. Like, yeah, 19's young, but you don't ask out a 13-year-old at 19 without like something going on.
So I saw this, and then I went to look at pictures, and yes, she does look beautiful, but she still does look like a child.
Yeah, and he had to like ask Yolanda for her number, like as in Yolanda, her mom. She like didn't even have a number at that point or something.
Yeah.
She said that she like didn't want to say that she couldn't go to this football game because it was like the next day, and she's like, I literally have school.
It's creepy.
13, like, sorry, no.
And because I was trying to think about it, like, okay, would a 19-year-old not really understand visually how people look different between 19 and 13? But no, at 19,
I think
was
you're
not
aware.
Looking at 13-year-old boys.
No, and my God, imagine. Yeah, I think it's like,
I mean,
and it just says something anyway. He's like, he's pitted as this like perfect, great, like upstanding moral family man. I swear the Jonas Brothers are literally the promise ring guys, are they not, as well? They were originally,
yes,
weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, he's trying to be this kind of like moral, upstanding, like all American Christian dude. Also, I've worked with one of her former friends before.
And?
So a former colleague of mine went to school with her and was like very much in her friendship group, and her parents are like still friends with her parents. So they grew up in Warwickshire. She clearly has come back and noticed them living their lives and being like, oh, okay, there are like all these benchmarks that now I haven't got to enjoy. But I thought at the same time, like, she, you know, good for her if she wants to be settled down. The friend did say to me that she thought it was weird. She was like, I'm really surprised that she would be like married with kids, not gonna lie.
Yeah. But I guess that was my point with the COVID thing, though, is that, yeah, okay, so they met 2016, but those first few years of romance, you're definitely trying to impress each other. You're not necessarily an accurate version of yourself. But the important years, when they settled down, got married and had two babies, she had a really unrealistic view of what he was like as a dad, as a husband, i.e. always at home.
But then what's weird is now it's being painted that she's the party animal and he's the, like, the good stay-at-home dad that's looking after the kids pretty much all the time. And even those photographs, he took them for brunch, yeah, with a nanny.
Why do you need a nanny to go to brunch?
With two children? With two kids? Like, is it literally that hard? But like, I bet you he's probably never looked after them on his own in his life, let's face it.
And the nanny looks so unbothered as well. She's just like probably normal stuffing her face.
I mean, I think most celebs do have nannies like round the clock. That's obviously the point, isn't it? It's like, you know, someone like, I brought her up before, but Kylie Jenner, like, can have two kids at 23 and have a really fun life because she's not doing most of the childcare. I think you even notice that with, like, the nails. Like, whenever the Kardashians have those, like, ridiculous, really long nails, and you're like, you're not changing nappies with those nails. Like,
yeah, you literally kill your child. Yeah. You'd impale them.
And they're like, oh my God, I'm balancing, like, work and motherhood, and it's all so hard. And it's like, but were you up five times in the night with a screaming child? I don't think so. I'm sure you have a sleep nurse for that or whatever.
Because I do think if those pictures by Joe Jenner's worst age, come on, at least for that day, go for brunch with your two kids without the nanny. I just felt like,
so how, like, ridiculously, like, detached from reality really that you can actually be.
Oh, I can only hold, and also you can hold a kid in both, in each arm, surely.
Or, like, even take, I don't know, a family member or something. I don't know.
So I should say at this point that I have interviewed Joe Jonas.
And how was
I did not warm to him. The main thing I found with Joe Jonas was that he was just so not funny. And
Trying to be funny? Was that the issue?
Well, no, I think the issue was more that my jokes weren't landing.
Oh, and okay, so, potentially, so you hated that he didn't laugh at your jokes?
Yeah, I hated that he didn't. No, because they were funny. And
can you give me an example?
I remember saying this at the time to friends. I can't remember what it was. It was an ironic quip and he didn't get it. And I had to repeat it.
Oh,
and it was like a really basic, like,
and it's just not that funny. And then you irony. Say it loads more and oh yeah. Dear.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that I was, like, you know, like, comedic, but I said enough, like, little funny banterous things that just, like, went completely over his head. It felt like he wasn't very switched on, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. And took himself too seriously. And interesting also, if you analyze Taylor Swift's lyrics for Mr. Perfectly Nice, which she allegedly wrote about him after they dated for a year, it fits very well with what we're seeing now. It's like, oh, Mr. Strategize, you know, like, getting always Mr. Smug, always getting your way.
Sounds very eerily similar.
Yes. And fun fact, when the song came out, so it was recorded for her Fearless album, but then she, when she re-recorded it, she dug it out of their, like, the vaults. She hadn't released it on the original album. And Sophie actually posted a screenshot of it, being like, it's not a bop, i.e. like, it's
yeah,
a bop.
Well, they've talked a lot, even together. Joe and Sophie have done interviews together talking about how great Taylor Swift's music is and how they love it and how they loved 1989 and it's got, like, banger after banger on it. So I definitely feel like there's not bad blood there.
No, so then he rewrote one of his songs that he wrote about the breakup with Taylor. I can't remember which one it is, but he rewrote the lyric to be like, oh, I'm cool with superstars now. I mean, it's a terrible lyric, but he was basically suggesting that him and Taylor Swift are cool now.
Right, got it.
And then she sent him a baby gift.
Yeah, they're on good terms, I thought.
They're on good terms, but if you read the lyrics to Miss Perfectly Nice, and if that is about Joe Jonas, my God, he sounds like the biggest douchebag of all douchebags.
Interestingly as well, the lawyer that he has, like, allegedly booked, I don't even know what the word is, employed for the divorce is the same divorce lawyer that did Tiger Woods.
So
well-versed in scumbags, and also represented Giselle in her breakup from Tom Brady.
What I found interesting, I don't know if you've seen this as well, is that I thought that the Jonas Brothers had a super kind of mental fan base in the same way that the One Deers had.
Yeah, like, I think they do.
But I've only seen overwhelming support for Sophie.
So I was having a look on Twitter earlier, or should I say X, and there was a lot of hate for Joe, but also loads of like lovey fan stuff, pictures from all the gigs. So we're recording this on Tuesday. Last night he played a gig at the Dodgers Stadium and he referenced the divorce for the first time.
Did he?
And he was like, oh, it's been a crazy week. I just want to let you all know that unless you hear something from these lips, like, don't believe it. But still. And then he played the song that, well, they played the song that was originally dedicated to Sophie. I think it's called Hesitate. So he allegedly wrote it for her and he like shed a tear and his brothers like hugged him on stage.
That's giving Stormzy lessons at Kingston Rose Theatre. Yeah.
That iconic performance.
I was there, guys. Yeah. It was such an iconic performance. That's where he lives, by the way. It's his local.
I think having a little look on Reddit as well, that this has been coming for a long time. So Sophie did that really gorgeous L cover last year. You know, she was pregnant. She looked beautiful. It was obviously like a thing to do with her Louis Vuitton, her long-standing Louis Vuitton partnership. She was wearing Louis V in like every single picture. But she talked about how much she wanted to move back to England. And I feel like you can see the signs there. So the quote was, I miss England so much. The people, the attitude, everything. I'm slowly dragging my husband back. I really love living in America, but for my mental health, I have to be around my friends and my family. Also for my daughter, I would love her to get the education and school life that I was so lucky to have. England would ideally be the final destination, but Joe might take a bit of convincing. My parents' house is the epitome of the English countryside. Horses, sheep, cows. I feel like now she's realised, perhaps, again, this is conjecture, but coming back to the UK to shoot Joan, maybe she's been like, do you know what? England is the final destination with or without my husband.
And maybe she's realised her husband doesn't have a sense of humour.
Quite
she
right.
Wants that British sarcasm and sheep.
And she might be in a much better place now, as we say, like, as you mentioned about your friend, she's perhaps come out the other side of a very long, difficult period. Maybe she's been empowered by motherhood. Maybe they've just fucking fallen out of love, which is perhaps why you don't get married when you've only been together for a few years. Yes. I think they were literally engaged a year after getting together. Again, no judgment. I know that there are loads of beautiful love stories that start that way, but it's a risk. It's definitely a risk.
But then again, I say that and I've never had the whole falling in love at first sight. I find it so interesting when people say that they've experienced that. Have you met people that have experienced that?
Do you know what?
I don't believe it.
I actually do have a friend who's getting married next year and she and her partner haven't been together like really long by both of our standards, which obviously are slightly mental. So listeners that haven't heard us mention this before, we are aware that we're in a very like unique position in that we've both been with our partners for like 10 years, which is not that common when you're in your early 30s.
We're old biddies now.
So what the fuck do we know? In a lot of ways, I will definitely put that out there. But yes, my friend is like wildly in love with her fiance and she did know, she said, from the day that she met him. Like she told our other friend afterwards, she was like, I've just met my husband. Like
that
she
is wild.
Yeah. And now they literally are getting married. So yeah, I do know people, I guess, that have
experienced love at first sight. Did you know that when you met Marlon?
Do you know what? I wouldn't say it was like love at first sight, and especially not as well, because we also had this weird thing where we'd actually kind of met when we were like 16, but like I couldn't remember him.
And we well, then met again. Flattering.
So yeah, I knew his name, but I would never have like recognized his face. I would have walked past him in a crowd. Like
I think he actually
came to like one of my like house parties in Brighton and definitely went straight over my head. But when we first met, I definitely had like an inkling. Like I knew there was like something there.
Babe, that's so cute.
I wouldn't say love at first sight. And we were both so not in the right place. Like we both really didn't want a relationship. I'd actually just like come out of a long-term relationship. We just wanted to like keep it casual. But I think on some level, like I definitely knew there was like something there. But I say that, I did know, but I mean, loads of people know. And then, you know, it lasts, relationships all run different courses. I knew in the moment then, but I don't think I could have been like, oh my God, I'm going to marry that person. I more was just like, I have an extremely strong like
attraction.
I'm drawn to this person and there's so much about him that is like so right for me. But
I'm going to cry.
All of those things come out later, I think, like we say, because you can't possibly know everything about someone on the first time you meet. So we have loads of weird synergies in our life as well. Like even on the level of like both of our, my youngest brother and his sister have the same birthday. Like literally silly things even like that.
What I was going to say, and this sounds maybe really like condescending to other people and I don't mean it to be, but I noticed that the couples or friends who were like, oh, we've said I love you within 2 seconds and he's put on these grand displays of affection and, oh, I'm going to marry him. They were always relationships that fizzled out.
Well, the data does show that the more you post your relationship on social media, the less likely it is actually happy.
Really?
Yeah, apparently like you're more likely to be headed for breakup if you post your relationship on social media all the time.
Well.
Whereas like the most content and happy couples don't post it that much because they don't feel the need to.
Yeah. Also, Is is always like, you're not allowed to post that. So it's more of a, I've tried to, and he's like, no. But yeah, but I do also think that if all these like gushing declarations of emotion come too easily to you, then it's not special. I don't know.
But maybe, I think also just different people are different. Like yeah. Some people feel a lot more comfortable putting like big displays of affection online than others. I mean, I always thought that was what was quite admirable about Sophie and Joe was that they kept their relationship like very private.
I was really obsessed with watching them together in lockdown though, because they had this beautiful, like sunny, where were they, in LA?
Yeah, they used to live in LA and then they relocated to Miami.
And I watched them for ages, like building a paddling pool or something. I mean,
so it was all like wholesome, cute stuff.
To show how busy I was. Yeah. But,
I must say that did pass me by at the time.
They were doing some kind of like DIY in their garden and I got really invested.
Cute.
And they seemed, to be fair, they both seemed really happy. He actually seemed great.
I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of pressures with that lifestyle that they both have as well. Like, it's not that common to like work away from each other like half the year. You know, that puts a lot on a relationship.
God, having two kids by the age of 27. How old is she now?
Yeah, she's 27 and she already has two children.
And she's
like, that's so much to go through.
I also do feel, and again, huge conjecturing, but having a baby is one of the main reasons why couples break up, right? And the filing for divorce happened just after she gave birth to her second child.
Again, I do think the experts say that like having a child plays havoc with your relationship.
I mean, literally, like it
objectively makes your relationship worse based on, again, the data. I think there's obviously the other part of it, which is like you have this whole new like respect and love for your partner and you see them in this different way and there's this like deeper thing going on. But also you're tired, you're cranky. Again, there's deeply unsexy, boring shit to get done.
You're losing your teeth, your nose gets bigger.
What? Pardon?
That's what I saw on TikTok.
What, right. When you have a child, as in as a woman or a man? Your nose gets bigger.
As a woman, apparently, I actually saw the before and afters. Pregnancy nose,
oh no,
is a terrible thing.
Gosh, and I've not heard of pregnancy nose.
Go and look at it on TikTok.
I did know also that your hair falls out.
Yeah, your hair falls out and you can lose teeth, I think. You have a calcium deficit, don't you?
Because you've been so busy growing them baby bones.
What else? Yeah.
Any midwives, please correct our
vaginal prolapse.
Antenatal.
Anal prolapse. I mean,
it's a lot to go through.
It's a lot to go through.
It is a lot to go through.
So, you know, but.
But a lot of women say as well that motherhood really empowers them and makes them feel like the strongest, like best version of themselves. And they're able to like really have a clearer idea or vision of like who they want to be, where they want to go. So maybe that's been part of it for her. She definitely has spoken very positively about motherhood. I mean, I suppose you're not really not going to, are you, if you're in the public eye like that?
But thing is, whenever I see people post on Instagram about motherhood, it's always this like, actually, it's like this deeply like heroic post that's actually just fucking bleak. Like there was one I read recently where it was like, the last year has been the hardest year of both of our lives. We've gone through highs and lows as a couple and no sleep, fights at midnight, but we always come together at the end. And it's like, but was that worth it though? Like,
you're not really selling this to me that much.
It's like, okay, yeah, you're still together, but by a thread. Yeah. And it sounds like you went through hell and back. What, like, I don't know. And it's always couched in this, like, we've gone through this horrendous, horrific journey and I'm clearly still depressed, but we've made it.
Yeah, made like, it through the other side.
But what if you didn't have to go through that? Is the question.
You're like, what if you just didn't have children?
Yeah, like, anyway, I don't know. I personally find those whole like posts very disturbing. And
they don't put me off completely. Like I'm still like, sign me up. I will definitely have kids. But perhaps that's also partly why I'm like, I'm now 32 and I'm like, not yet.
Well, that's saying, and I'm 1 year behind you.
Yeah.
And you are one of the most motherly people I know.
And I'm still not on that bandwagon.
So,
well, I mean, all this mum shaming that Sophie Turner's going through really is quite off-putting, actually. Oh, what? You're not now allowed to like go out and have fun with your friends because you've literally had a baby. That's mental. Like all my friends that have kids are still super fun. Obviously, yeah. They have to have a more limited lifestyle in terms of like childcare and hours out. And obviously, if you have a young baby, that is much more restrictive, especially if you're breastfeeding. But This idea that you can't have a life because you have a kid, I think, is so problematic. And what I do think is very heartening about the response to Sophie and Joe is that people are like not buying the mainstream media's like misogynistic bullshit. Like you say, so many of Joe Jonas's fans and everyone else are being like, hold on a second. Like, no, actually, this is just you spinning a mum-shaming narrative. She's completely entitled to be able to like enjoy her life as a 27-year-old. Why shouldn't she be able to go out with colleagues when her husband or co-parent is literally in charge of the childcare in another continent right now?
What do you think of parents that bring their kids to festivals? So I know one friend of a friend gave birth and then was out in the clubs. Okay, actually, this is a bit different. I know one friend of a friend who went clubbing the week after she gave birth.
I mean, fuck me. If you're in the physical state to do that, you do you, honey, is what I'd say. Because based on stories that I've heard about birth, I will absolutely not be in the physical state to be night clubbing.
Won't you be leaking milk everywhere?
You literally have like stitches in your vagina. Oh. Like, I mean, again, I'm sure all experiences are different, but the postpartum body, like you're in a state, you've been through like a huge physical thing. Like your hormones are all over the place. Like hats off to that hun if she was in the club, like good for her. I just can't imagine that most people are actually in the physical or mental space to do that.
Male listeners, I hope you were aware that anuses and vaginas tear during
especially pregnancy. With your first baby.
Oh my God.
During childbirth. They snip. There's this thing called an episiotomy where they actually like snip.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah, I had
to avoid
that.
The tearing.
Oh my God, I actually can't deal with that.
Again, especially with your first baby.
Oh my God. What if you have twins? Oh my God, if you have twins, you have to surely, you can't.
I don't know. I mean, I actually don't know anyone that's given birth to twins.
Can like, twins?
Without it being a cesarean. So I don't know.
Can they ever come out at once? Or do they have to?
No, no. What? You mean two babies out the hole at one time? Obviously not.
I don't know, they already stretches to magnanimous proportions.
But like a baby's head size, not two babies' head size.
Yeah, but my head size was the size of two of my sister's head sizes.
What, you were a giant?
I was a giant
big
baby.
Rotter.
Yeah, my mum thought I would be a very ugly person.
Oh, what, because you treated her with such disdain during your birth.
She was deeply concerned. It's still one of the most harrowing experiences. I mean, I say that relatively to my experiences, but when I listened to Shag Marry Avoid, no, what's called Married at First Sight? No, Shag Married Annoyed, you know the podcast.
Yes.
Babe, you know the
the couples podcast. Yeah. It's like the biggest UK podcast, yes. In fact, I think, isn't it?
And the man talked about how repelled he was touching his babies. Or even the word makes you feel sick. Fontanelle.
What's a fontanelle? Oh, is that that soft bit at the top of the head?
Yeah, and he said it was like
cat's cradle.
He said it was like liquid.
Ew.
He said it was so soft, it was like liquid. Ew. And he touched it and he felt sick at his own baby. So imagine how I'm going to feel. Touching your kid's fontanelle.
Well, I'd rather you not be shoving your fingers into its bit of head that's missing a skull. So I think I'll be okay with that.
Until it's formed its fontanelle.
It's only allowed to be around you once it has a full skull.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I actually read a really good piece in today.com, which was from like a very interesting PR specialist. She's called Molly something. I'm sorry, I'll have to check that and I'll link it in the show notes. But she goes through the whole thing and shows how like tactical it is. The headline was Sophie Taylor, Joe Jonas, and why the court of public opinion matters in celebrity divorces. Mm. So she was saying how a celebrity divorce is like a microcosm of a normal divorce, which is that people always want to show that they're the one that was wronged and they're like the good, innocent party. But in a celebrity divorce, obviously that takes whole new levels. People are, as a side note, comparing this to the smear campaign that was put out by Brad Pitt's PR against Angelina Jolie. So like trying to make her look like a bad mother after their whole plain debacle. I think it's quite like a one from the playbook to make a woman look like a bad mother in order to then make her look bad in a divorce.
I bet these are like female lawyers as well. The shame.
Yeah, well, probably female publicists, let's face it. Most publicists are women, I would say.
And
the whole industry is dominated by women. But yes, she goes through like line by line all of the little tactical decisions that they've made within the divorce and explains why they are obviously a PR move and part of constructing a narrative. So even the divorce statement that Joe and Sophie put out shared together was like on a Sunday in a public holiday. Like it was at a quiet time where like journalists and editors aren't in their offices. Like it's hopefully less likely to get picked up, that jazz.
Right.
Yeah. I also really liked a little opinion piece in Vogue, which was Long Live the Party Mom. about what's wrong with a party mom and how great they are and how much they set you up. The woman writing it was like, I actually had a dinner party mom and she really like helped me understand social scenarios and how to entertain. And actually it was brilliant. So that was
quite
fun.
Do you think we'll be party moms?
I'm 100% going to be a party mom. I'd love to be a party mom. I really want to be
like that. Also, I've noticed with you recently, and I don't know if I'm also going through this, but I feel like you're becoming more fun.
Thank you. I mean, lol, but...
Because I feel like... Because I think both of us have recovered from our year or two of being genuinely poisoned by alcohol.
Too much fun. Yes.
No, not even too much fun. Just like such inappropriate hangovers for how much we drank. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, this year's been a good one for me. I said this to you off air earlier because I'm back on the wine. Last year, I literally could not drink wine. Like white wine would literally turn my stomach. Like I would feel like I was going to violently... projectile vomit every day the minute I had a sip of white wine. Now it's going down pretty well. When I was on holiday, slapping on that wine. It was great.
Do you think maybe we've rebuilt our stomach lining?
Yes, I think we have rebuilt our stomach lining, which has been a relief.
It was so sad at uni that people would have to go to the doctors and get pills to rebuild.
I literally had to do that. I had to get like these special pills from the doctor. Actually, it was like it was in between my degree in my MA, and I was literally at the point where I just even 3 pints at the pub the next day I'd be like violently throwing up all day, couldn't hold down water, I wouldn't even feel hungover. It was just like I couldn't physically stomach any food or liquid. I obviously did slightly embellish to the doctor. I was like, it's after 1 pint, because I felt like 3 sounded a little bit too much. And she was like, well, you know, if you were telling me that you were coming in, you know, and you were having 4 tequila shots, then I'd be like, sorry, but you just need to stop drinking. But you know, I think that's fair enough if it's just 1 beer. And yeah, I did them for about 3 months. Then one of my other friends was like, you know, you do need to be careful of those because they can like deplete your white blood cell count or something. They actually do have like other serious health effects.
Oh my god. See, I didn't take the pills, but my stomach lining was definitely destroyed and then rebuilt itself.
Probably it's like cheap alcohol. It's like, I remember at uni, people always would drink like the table wine, Sainsbury's own brand Basics. It's £3 a bottle. It was like vinegar.
And Glen's vodka.
Glen's vodka was my kryptonite. I've had several very bad hangovers from that. Yeah.
Several? God, that sounds minimal. I mean, mine was like every 2 days.
Oh, I don't even want to go into it now. I call it the bad experience TM, but... My bestie and I, when we were 14, had a very bad experience.
Did you get stomach pumped?
No, but we did end up in hospital. Stayed in hospital. Do you not know this story? You must know this story. Oh my God, it was awful. We're in year 9. We went to a party. It was also really inconvenient because I lied to my parents about where I was. Like, I don't even know why I lied, because my mum wouldn't have said no to me going to a party, but I just didn't say her. I said that I was staying over at this girl's house from school, and we went to this party and we bought like a bottle of vodka, like a litre of vodka, and just drank it straight. Like, we were so young, like we literally were drinking it straight out of the bottle, like at the train station. Next thing I remember, I was like waking up in a hospital bed. I mean, I vaguely remember some like really, really, really cringe things from that night, but I remember waking up in a hospital bed and being like, shitty death, I am in so much trouble. My mum was fuming.
That's a new mannerism I haven't heard of yours.
My mum was fucking fuming, and Rachel's parents were also fuming. Weirdly, she'd been less drunk than me earlier. I'd responded to the alcohol quickly, but then I was like better earlier. So I left the hospital before she did and I went in to see her. And I think, again, it was quite a good tactic of my parents, really, because my mum was like, I think they wanted me to see how ill she was, to be like, look what you've done to yourselves. Kind of thing. And Andy, my stepdad, even like filmed me and made me watch it after, which was obviously horrific.
How can I get access to this film?
It's literally so old now. Like, and it was probably on like a Motorola or something. But yeah, the bad experience really shaped my drinking for a while. I literally couldn't drink vodka for like years and years and years after that. So I've had to be careful with the Glens. Careful with the cleanse.
Right. Anyway.
Back to the topic of a young divorcee. I just tell you about the book that I read while I was on holiday by Monica Heisey? So fun fact, she's a Canadian screenwriter. She wrote some of Schitt's Creek. And I was kind of reminded of her recently because she was in Caroline O'Donoghue, former guest and fave of ours, wedding pictures. So she was at the wedding. And I was like, oh, I recognize that writer. And then I was like, oh, it's her. And then funnily enough, in the airport, Marlon was buying a book and they had that buy one, get one half price. And so he was like, quickly get a book. And so I just saw her name there and I was like, I'll get that. And it was called Really Good, actually. And it's a novel all about being a young divorcee, a divorcee in your 20s. I'm sorry to say, I didn't love it.
Oh my God.
So I enjoyed the actual writing. It was very well written. It's really funny. There was a lot of great little, like, very... bang on observations about like TV and film. Like there was one that I liked that was like, aren't women that get divorced always meant to be like Diane? Like, so like Diane Keaton, Diane Lane, and they're meant to know a lot about wine and like funny perceptive things. Like there's another that she talks about books and holiday reads. And she's like, you know, based on the books I read on holiday, when you meet an older couple, aren't they meant to like invite you first into their home and then their relationship? I'm like, that actually does happen in a lot of the books we've read.
Yeah, it does.
Like Young and Jeanne.
It actually happens in Caroline and Donahue's book, The Rachel.
And in that book, Insatiable by Daisy Buchanan, yes, that we talked about recently. So I was like, fair enough, that is actually quite a funny trope. But I just felt it to be very self-indulgent, I'm not going to lie. I actually wrote some notes that were like, to myself, that were like, I need to discuss with Ellie because this is just everything that we've been talking about recently.
Oh my God,
especially in our Bad Boy Literature episode.
Oh my God. Reams of notes.
I know. I had to send them to
WhatsApping yourself.
Yes. This is my new like deranged way of like keeping on top of things. Cause I'm just like, otherwise I always like write things down on like a fucking
scrap
paper.
Guys, when I say Kathleen has literally sent herself an entire book's worth.
Oh no, look. This is where I send myself like so loads of ideas.
Oh my God, that is so cute. Pictures of what is that?
The Skims I returned. All sorts of bits and bobs.
So
basically,
fun.
Just when I need something, I send it there. Anyway.
Wait, I didn't even know you could WhatsApp yourself.
Find top. Yes. It's Tom, another Tom Holland chef brother interview. Check this hotel out. Like random deranged notes to myself. They were hotels in Lefkada that I was like, oh, I want to go like,
find
check them
Rixo
out.
Bandana yeah. Top.
So like, yeah, when I just need a reminder to myself, this
Do
is
you
where
have
I
a
now
Rixo bandana top?
Well, I did. I can't find it as no, the note says.
Hilarious.
So my main issue was essentially the main character was this same type of woman that I've mentioned before. I mean, I'm not asking for anyone to make their female protagonist perfect, but this whole thing of the hot mess, I've said this before, I'm just kind of over it. Yeah. It's just got boring to me. Like, incompetent woman who can't control her emotions, who fucks up at everything and all her friends find her annoying. And I don't know, like there was just like in the book, okay, so I'll paint the picture. It's about Maggie, who is about 28 and she's got divorced. Her husband and her met at 19 at university. They move in after, they get a cat, all the rest of it. And then marriage is just kind of like the next step. One thing they Monica Heisey does touch on, which I agree with, is that marriage is perhaps like the last vaguely adult thing that like early millennials, late Gen Zs, whatever can do that's like vaguely adult, because so many of those markers of adulthood that all of our parents had are now inaccessible. So marriage is something you can do that feels like vaguely grown up. So I do kind of like get what she's saying there, but equally I'm like, if you're that worried about being a divorcee like before you're 30, like don't get married when you're 27, you know?
Simple solution.
It's a simple solution, is it not? And yeah, I love a flawed and realistic protagonist, as I say, but they just feel like it leans into all these really tired stereotypes about how what women are like that just don't ring true for me. Like, yes, lots of women I know, like, you know, aren't perfect all the time. Obviously, we're like 360 beings, but I just don't know that many women who, like, even in a breakup, would spend like thousands of pounds that they literally don't have on like candles and mad clothes that don't fit them. You know, those kind of things. When women get into this, like, these types of protagonists get like hysterical and do all this just mental crap, and they become like really offensive to all their friends and really self-obsessed. And I'm like, do that many people do that? Like, of course, we can all be a bit self-obsessed, especially if you're going through something like a divorce. Like, that is obviously a time when you're going to be quite self-centric, but I found it frustrating. Like, I felt like I was literally one of her friends reading it. So her friendship group in the book get progressively over the year that she's divorced more and more like sick of her. And I was like, I'm literally sick of her.
Yeah.
This main character. And
it's interesting because I would have thought that maybe that's like a male writer's like understanding of women, but annoying that it's a woman writing about women in such a two-dimensional way.
And she keeps like tweeting all the time. Like, she goes to a wedding and like live tweets about like how shit it is and stuff, and it's like, would you do that just because you'd got divorced? Like, would you be that unself-aware? Like, it kind of lent into this like very narcissistic navel-gazing type of person, which I do feel is quite true of these women in literature and like in personal journalism especially.
Yeah,
you know, this like they're unhinged, but they're fun, but they spend all their time making mad scrapbooks about haircuts they could get. I mean, that's not something that happens in the book, but you know what I mean?
I totally, like, know what
do
you
mean.
Know
what type of person I mean?
Yeah.
And I think I find it extra jarring because we've recently read Dolly Alderton's upcoming book, which is also all about a breakup. So I don't know whether I was just a bit over this like thing of like a breakup is the worst thing in the world that could ever happen to you.
Because you're sick of female pain, which is what we were talking about in the last episode.
But like, I'm all here for real female pain. Like we say, like, I want to hear about people that have been through some real shit.
Yes,
I'm sorry, getting divorced at 27 does not make you a martyr. It just doesn't. You shouldn't have got married then, should you? If you're that worried about being a divorcee.
Quite right.
And I just think, she goes on the whole book about being rejected and stuff. And it's like, you literally asked him to move out. You haven't been rejected. And again, she's a Canadian writer and it's based in Toronto. I don't know if this is my very British, like stiff upper lip, like keep calm and carry on. But I'm like, there are literally so many worse things that can happen to you in the world than getting divorced. There actually are. Like, fucking pull your socks up, get a grip.
And I say this having just written a very long, pathetic article about being rained on in Paros. Yeah. But is it not maybe that she just needed content for a book?
And well, so she also, so I didn't realize this while I was reading the book, because again, at first I was like, God, this protagonist seems, oh, very physically similar, at least to the author. Like the way that she's described with like red hair and stuff. Like she literally looks exactly like the author. The author's called Monica. The main character's called Maggie. Mm. So again, it was the thing that we've talked about a lot of, like, there's absolutely no distance between the protagonist and the writer. But I then did discover that the writer herself has also been divorced at 27 and her ex kept the cat, which is like one of the main things that happens in this. And I'm like, very, very much anchored in personal experience here. Mm. Could you have written a memoir instead, perhaps?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I feel like there's so many quotes that say from famous published authors that say your first book is always going to be a veiled autobiography. Then your next book is the one where you actually write properly.
And she does say that in the Guardian interview that I read, like, I'm interested in doing something like that's not so closely tied to personal experience. But it does literally just feel that it's like, I don't know, there's this sense, and like, okay, shoot me if I'm wrong. Listeners, let me know what you think about this. But some of these books kind of inadvertently, and I'm definitely sure subconsciously and accidentally, give this sense that like middle-class women in the West are like the most wretched demographic on earth. And I'm like, come on. Yes. Like, come on. Like,
Would you like to go to Afghanistan, like, maybe?
Get a grip. There are worse things that can happen to you than being broken up with or having your friends find you a bit annoying or getting drunk and sending some embarrassing messages. Or I don't know, I just feel like, and also like how many people, so in the breakup, she like calls and texts her ex like every single day for like 7 months, like literally like singing into their voicemail. Does anyone actually do that? Does anyone actually have that little self-respect and pride that they would literally stalk their ex throughout a divorce? Yes. I mean, I suppose, yes, they do.
I suppose they do.
I suppose it does send people mad, and maybe that's the point of it.
I guess it's probably, these all feel like very generic, big gestures where I think the most relatable things are found in the very specific, right?
Yes.
And there's just clearly not enough really specific, subtle things.
No, and the one thing that I did find very funny, as I say, are these smaller everyday observations, and one that I wanted to get into with you.
I had mascara on. Have I just fucked my eye?
It's not too bad, actually. Okay. So part of this kind of getting over the divorce is getting into adult hobbies. And she says how like every time you go for an adult hobby, you're like, oh, maybe there'll be like a hot guy there. And you're like, nope, it's also just loads of other women that are going through divorces or people that have like moved to the town recently or whatever. And like, it's very rare that you're going to actually like make friends and have that whole thing happen there. But my favorite...
Why don't any hot guys pick up hobbies? It's so irritating.
I mean, my favorite line in the book, which I was like, I have to get into this with you.
Oh, yeah.
And this is no diss to people that like organized fun, because loads of my friends even do. Like, I have a friend that's brilliant at organizing treasure hunts and gang activities, whatever. But the line was, genuinely fun people do not need someone to organize fun for them. And I felt that to my very core. I hate organized fun. And so do you.
I hate it, but it's...
We hate organized fun. We hate
it, but it makes me feel self-conscious that I'm not fun enough.
Why can't we all just sit and chat?
Yeah, like I way prefer.
I'm sorry, all my friends are fun enough that I don't need us to be like doing some weird organized game or like wearing weird costumes or whatever. Like when we sit and hang out, like when we go for dinner, the four of us, like we don't need to be playing Uno during.
God, I hate board games. Absolutely. However, there are some quite funny boys' games I've enjoyed playing. Like there was one that we played. I mean, this is literally ridiculous, but there's one we played when I went to Croatia with me and the boys. Right, it's called... they literally made it up. It's called Slap or No Slap. And I shit you not, this is the premise of the game. You go around in a circle and you say, so I would say to you, because you're on my right, slap or no slap.
Yeah.
And you either get slapped, which means it passes on to the next person. Or if you choose to have no slap, you have to do a forfeit.
So it's like a truth or dare vibe, but instead of a truth, it's a slap.
Yes, and then there's another weird...
Okay, that does sound quite fun. But I don't know. I don't really want to get smacked around the face endlessly.
By a man.
Yeah. That said, again, hey, maybe this is one way in which the patriarchy can work in our favour. I feel like they're obviously not going to slap you as hard as they would slap the boys. I got comedic slap rather than a wallop.
I got pretty hard.
There's some Harvard resentment there.
And then there's also, and then the part of the game is you make up rules. So you have to play slap or no slap whilst also, for instance, only talking out the side of your mouth or
Beneath that's your legs. A drinking game.
Yeah, it's mad. Oh, yes. I don't think it's forfeit. I think it's drinking three fingers or something. It was really fun.
All right. Well, that I can handle.
But it is quite violent and weird.
Yeah.
I can't imagine playing that with a group of girls. Girls slapping your bronzer off your face.
Imagine I had my hen. We're like, right.
Imagine if I came to your hen and suggested playing slap or no slap. And all your friends would have to humour me because I'm like outside the group.
I mean, yes. I will say, when the hen that I went on this year, we did do like pin the penis on the man, which I think I mentioned in the podcast, which was quite fun. But I wanted that to be like a quick 10 minutes, not...
I'm going to suggest slap or no slap at your hen and there's nothing you can do about it.
No, I don't want to play.
I'm going to do it.
Okay, well, fine.
Right.
Okay, very quickly before we end, can I get your take on Timothy Chalamet and Kylie Jenner? Do we like...
Well, when
I'm into it.
They're a hot couple, but when I watched her kissing him at Beyonce, it looked like she'd specifically staged it. She looked straight at the cameras.
So I have to say.
And it could have like, oh, you caught me kissing.
One of our listeners did say when we asked for thoughts.
He or she.
It was a she. She said, honestly, can't decide if it's real or not, but I don't think the TMZ watermark is a coincidence.
Oh.
I was like, God, very TMZ good is such a point. And the Kardashians are known for like staging paparazzi shots and all the rest of it. Like, I feel like it's probably not incidental. And the rumor mill has been going for a while that they're together. So they will have very much like chosen this. But then they did like they were at the US like men's tennis the other day as well, doing like cute little like arms around each other. Like they've been putting on the PDAs.
Also,
I'm into it. I'm here for it.
And also, he looked like, I mean, okay, these fake relationships, you can't just have a completely fake relationship. Like they clearly.
Although, do you know what I will say? Right? Sorry, I have a theory.
Oh, yeah.
Fellow Kardashians fans, let me know if you agree.
I say, on the Kardashians note, you keep systematically ignoring every time I send you a really funny video from this like TikTok Kardashians.
I know, because I've seen it. So the salad shaking video that you sent me the other day.
Yeah.
You literally sent me that like 3 months ago,
didn't
you?
It's a different salad shaking one.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Her whole thing is she does different salad shaking ones.
Oh, I thought you just kept sending me the same thing and you were like forgetting that you sent it and I didn't have the heart to be like, you've sent me this. Yeah.
So many times. No, she always shakes the salads.
Okay, I will watch that. Sorry, I thought
it was I'll put it in the show notes, guys, but it's this very funny TikTok creator that spoofs the Kardashians.
She is actually really good at doing all their different voices.
Yeah.
But one thing I did find interesting, little Kardashian conspiracy here, was in a recent episode Kylie talks about how her and Kim have literally had the same life and that they're like twins, and she's like winks at the camera in this like knowing way, and she's like, but you'll never know why. And my take on it is actually I was like, is she referring to the fact that Kanye and Travis are in fact sham relationships and they kind of like use them for the kids, but there was actually no love there?
Oh,
I think that could definitely be possible. Because people always said Kanye was like, as in Kim was Kanye's beard, was a theory for a long time.
I can believe that.
Yeah. And perhaps Travis and Kylie was tactical. You know, we know that she wanted kids. Maybe it was a good look for him, for his career as well. These could well be PR relationships.
Okay. If there are any PRs listening or anyone that knows of people that work, literally like connecting people to have fake sham relationships in the public eye, can you let us know? Because I'm intrigued by it. Like,
I'm
how
really
can
intrigued.
You can't just stay, that's acting. That's called actual professional.
They're very rarely
acting.
Seen together. Do you know what I mean? So even like people are now comparing how Kylie was with Travis to how her and Timothée are, because they're like, why do I keep saying Timothée? Is it Timothée? It is Timothée. I'm going mad.
Timothée Chalamet. He's trying to be Timothée.
Yeah, Timothée. That they're basically all like PDAing and hugging and kissing and laughing, whereas like she never did that with Travis. Like it was always like very like standoffish vibes.
But the amount of like, wouldn't you feel so wild having a fake relationship?
I mean, maybe not if you're Kylie Jenner though. Kris Jenner's your mom, probably quite used to
like
the fake life.
I find the Taylor Swift Tom Hiddleston thing, do you think that was a fake relationship, PR relationship?
No, I didn't, but maybe I am naive with these things. I think,
oh, someone told me another really good one. Oh, they think Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello.
Yes, I've had that. I have heard that as well,
and that he's gay.
Yeah.
But then I find that hard to believe, because I remember when we both interviewed Ryan Tedder, separately.
together.
He said how Shawn Mendes really fancied Camila and he'd help set them up.
Yeah, and also I think that that's often a bit like, I don't know, it's like slight homophobia, isn't it? It's like people being like, oh, he can't possibly be actually, like he's covering up something. Whereas I think Shawn has said before, like, hey, if I was gay, I'd just be gay. Leave me alone.
Oh, so he's addressed the rumors.
I think he has, definitely about his sexuality, not necessarily about Camila specifically. But I think people are loving Timmy, and I mean, I actually have to say, even though he's a complete dweeb, no offense, I think he's really quite hot in a weird way.
He is not, sorry.
Oh, come on, he is. He's like, I'm a charmy.
Sorry.
A charmy. Do you know what they are? That's the Timothy fan club. Like, that's what the stands call themselves, the charmies. And they've been into him since Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, because they're about 2 years old and he looks...
No, they were like fully grown, like divorced, like 40-something-year-old, like mothers. But yeah, I find him hot. I think he's got like a really suave, cool personality. Like, he's so cool in that Apple advert. I mean, again, it's an Apple advert.
No, he is cool. He is really cool and he's got a beautiful face.
He's knowing. He's funny.
I think
he's a great actor. And I feel like he's got like that cool indie darling thing going on, which is why people find him such an unexpected couple, because he's like, as I say, this indie film like god, and she's like Instagram baddie basic bitch. So people are like, what the hell could they possibly talk about? There's this quite funny meme though showing him dancing. It's like an in response to that, like, what do they have to talk about? And it's him as like a teenager doing like the lamest, nerdiest dancing ever, but he's like a fun nerd.
Yeah, he's a really good rapper apparently.
Yeah,
well, I say really good,
I like
good
in a comical way.
Yeah, he was really good in Bones and All.
Oh yeah, I still need to watch that.
No, you'd hate it. You mustn't watch it.
Oh, the cannibal
horror.
I mean, I think as well, it's quite unfair to like, it shows how much though in our like parasocial relationship with celebrities, we've like put on our own perceptions of what someone's like. So everyone assumes that Kylie is like really materialistic and really vapid and like shallow and narcissistic. And so you're like, how could she possibly be with this like French speaking, like indie film watching, like cool kid? And actually it's like, we clearly don't know anything about either of them because they obviously do have far more in common than we might have assumed.
Yes, but then wouldn't you say that we do know quite a lot about Kylie Jenner because of how much she posts about her life? I mean, does she ever post arty films or...
No.
I mean, I just feel like considering she shares so much of her life, you might think we know more than...
But all she shares, she actually doesn't. Like, all she really shares is like selfies of herself that are like very stylized and she's had her makeup done and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so what you're saying is she could potentially be...
I'm not going to lie, I'd be pretty shocked if she's secretly into like avant-garde French film. But
I mean, not that that's a flex either. I think people that are into really avant-garde French film are probably really annoying and boring also.
Yeah. Let us know what you think, Hans.
Yes.
The verdict's out.
The verdict's out. Personally, if Timothy Chalamet...
it's really hard to like constantly pronounce this. Timothy Chalamet.
I could not accept his kind offer of me being his girlfriend.
I would definitely take it.
Imagine sitting on his lap.
I know, you probably would feel like you're going to like crush him.
But... You would crush him.
For me, he feels a bit teenage still. That's actually kind of my issue. But Kylie Jenner is only like 24, so we are quite a bit older than her, sadly.
Yeah, that's true. No, he's a very good looking man. And
I saw a really funny tweet, actually, that was like, when Kylie's Italian greyhounds look at Timothée Chalamet, do they think it's her dad?
Also, I'm sorry, but I just cannot unsee that horrendous meme of Kylie and Timothy together in the bath. And it's like a bronzed, like normal sized human leg with some like little skeletal, like horrid, like deformed paw that's like so white and translucent.
Like Timmy, like the little ill one. I can't even think of it. Tiny Tim.
Oh, in what?
I don't know, just like all that. It's like, just the, that, just I want to say that it's in that Christmassy thing,
Tim.
Isn't it?
Tiny Tim, you know, the Christmas thing. Tim in Rupert the Bear?
No, he's in the Charles Dickens thing. I keep wanting to say Nightmare Before Christmas, but you know what I mean.
Oh, with Christmas
Scrooge.
Carol.
Yes, Tiny Tim, Christmas
right.
Carol.
Yeah. Yes. I don't remember his physicalities, but yes.
On that note,
guys, I will quickly recommend one good book.
Please do.
It's called Ordinary Human Failings by Megan Nolan. She's like a very of the moment young Irish writer. Was very lauded for her debut, Acts of Desperation. Anyway, I haven't read that, but this novel is all about
it's like a thriller, really, about a guy who works as a journalist on the news desk and who becomes obsessed with this family who are in the news for a horrible murder. Ooh. I won't say much more, but essentially it becomes a really damning like look at how journalists want to find a story, and often they know the story that they want before they actually go out looking
for
it.
That does sound interesting.
So they're like putting their version of events, or rather what they want to find out, on people without knowing anything about them and without bothering really to find out who they really are. So it's a very Great. Interesting look at how fucked up and sickening a lot of journalism is, and certainly was back, it's like from the, it's based in like the 80s, I think. It's so clever and so propulsive, and it's only 200 pages, so.
Great, well, I'll read that.
I'm gonna lend it to you right now after I take a picture of it.
I thoroughly enjoyed Yellowface.
Oh, which I'm you so lent glad. To me after last episode.
Honestly, guys, if you haven't already read it, go get it. It's probably the best book I've read this year. Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's definitely up there.
Ooh, is it the best? Yeah, it's definitely in the top five.
Yeah, a real page turner.
So good. Isn't the film going to be so good?
So great.
I mean, I don't actually know who's bought it yet, but it's going to be excellent. Okay, so, we also have some recommendations from our, I don't have my phone, from our readers.
From our readers?
Book recommendations. They left
our listeners.
Comments. Sorry, guys, our listeners.
Okay, also a few final book recos from you gorgeous honeys. Please keep them coming in. We are so grateful. It's so nice to have this good old community of book-loving nerds just like us.
Yes.
So they are Mom, Mame by Jessica George. I mean, I've literally fucked that one up on the first read.
Mommy.
M-A-A-M-E. By Jessica George.
Mame.
Fabulous. Demon Copperhead, which actually you mentioned to me earlier, didn't
yes.
you? Masterfully written. I'm Sorry You Feel That Way. Oh, we love that. We've read that. We talked about it in an episode, didn't we? We'll find that episode and link it in the yes. show
For
notes.
Fans of Eleanor Oliphant, it's completely fine, I would say. That same kind of quite funny style of writing.
It's the one we read both in the Maldives, I think, isn't it? No, maybe yes, it was it after. Is. I can't remember. We will link it. The Last Americans by Brandon Taylor, which jumps between perspectives of graduating students in an Iowa arts college.
I absolutely loved Brandon Taylor's first book, Real Life.
Okay, fab.
So good.
I must say, having read Really Good Actually, the divorce novel, it made me think that I do, in fact, perhaps prepare books from multiple perspectives. Yes. Think I can get a bit sick of one.
Mm.
The final one that I want to share today with you gorgeous honeys is Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides.
Such a good book. I read that.
Amazing book about the intersex experience in Greek and American history. Ooh, we actually did have that recommended previously as well.
Do you want me to lend that to you? I've got it.
Yes, please.
I'll give that to you after.
That would be fab.
Well, hope you enjoyed. If you want us to do more book content, let us know.
Please rate, review and subscribe, as always. Shoot us a DM at Straight Up Pod, and we will see you honeys next week.
Sorry if we sounded a bit tipsy. We were drinking some
yes, we didn't really, even shout them out, so we're really actually gorgeous. Drinking
oh my
some
god baby
lovely...
barely finished your second one. No I wonder I felt like secretly privately drunk at halfway
did
through.
You so they're Goldling vodka soda canned drinks. They're so yummy. Goldling Spirits Company organic vodka soda. I'm drinking the one with British strawberry, pomegranate and a hint of cayenne pepper. You're drinking the one with,
I've already kicked it over and it can...
It's like pineapple and kefir lime, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're very drinkable, lovely little cans, perfect for parties.
It was genuinely really delicious. So much nicer than the hard seltzers. The, what are they called? The
White Claws. White Claws, those American ones. Yeah, much, much, much
nicer. White Claws don't have any flavour. These are 95 cals per can. I don't know how much White
Claws
is. Yes, and
6% ABV. Anyway... That's just a little shout out. We were kindly gifted a couple of cans, but this is not an ad. Very tasty. We'll link them in the show notes.
Okay, see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.